T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, ignition. We have liftoff of the S-26.
The Alaska Aerospace Corporation was created by the Alaska State Legislature in 1991 to help grow the 49th state's aerospace industry. The company has now been launching rockets for 20 years, sending three into space over the past 2 years. It currently operates a launch complex on Alaska's Kodiak Island.
From Kodiak, we launch polar, so we launch to the south. So satellites and the launches we do are really intended to go into the polar orbit, which goes around the north-south pole, basically, 90 degrees to the spin of the Earth.
That's Craig Campbell, CEO of Alaska Aerospace. Polar orbiting satellites are good for applications like mapping and surveillance photography because they can cover the entire surface of the Earth.
When a satellite is in a polar orbit, it's going north to south, and the Earth's spinning east to west. So you can put a number of satellites in orbit, and they will cover the entire globe. Just because the globe's moving in 90 degrees, as they go around imaging as an example, you can take a picture of every spot on Earth by using a polar orbit.
Satellites can also be launched from east to west, known as an equatorial orbit.
Equatorial orbits are more limited. They spin with the Earth around the equator. About 70% of the Earth's population is located along the equator, north and south. So those satellites are really good for communications, broadband internet, and to be able to reach a large population base by having the satellite go around at the same direction around the equatorial belt. So a lot of companies, they need both polar and equatorial orbits to have a full constellation of satellites to provide comprehensive service.
Alaska Aerospace can currently launch satellites from a polar orbit, but not an equatorial one. To understand why, Campbell provides a quick lesson in rocket science.
If you're going equatorial, you're going to launch east. You're going to go with the spin of the Earth. So by launching equatorial with the Earth spin, the Earth spin is helping push that rocket and making it more efficient than going against it. You don't want to use a lot of fuel to fight nature. You want to use minimum fuel and have a maximum payload, because that's where the payment comes from, that's where the money comes from, is the satellite.
The Earth spins from west to east, or left to right if you're looking at a map. For safety reasons, that means you need a lot of empty space to the east of your launch site. And there's another factor to consider. The Earth actually rotates faster at the equator than it does at the poles. That's why one day is 24 hours long anywhere on Earth. So the closer you are to the equator, the less fuel you need to reach orbit. Not many places in the United States are close to the equator with a wide expanse of unpopulated area to the east. One of the best is already taken, NASA's launch site at Cape Canaveral, Florida.
We looked pretty far. We looked at Guam. We looked at the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas, specifically at Saipan and Tinian. We did an evaluation of American Samoa. We did not look at Wake Island or Kwajalein because those are federal facilities, federal operations, and we were told by our board that it must be commercial. We're not trying to attract government missions with this spaceport for Equatorial. We're trying to collect the small commercial market. So that we wanted to make sure we had the autonomy of operating under our own federal license, and therefore we did not go to Kwajalein. We did not go to Wake. Guam, CNMI, American Samoa, and Hawaii.
As it turns out, East Hawaii Island is one of the better places in the United States from which to send a rocket into orbit. Rodrigo Romo is the director of a Hilo-based state agency that promotes economic development in the aerospace industry. He says Hawaii's geographic advantage provides an opportunity for economic diversification.
The economy of the state is heavily dependent on tourism, service industry, and the Big Island on agriculture. And there's only so much, you really can't have a state depend on just those two economic drivers, because it's just not sustainable. They don't produce high-paying jobs. So the aerospace industry is one in which there is interest. One of the drivers for the aerospace industry is Hawaii's proximity to the equator, and that puts Hawaii in a privileged position, actually.
This isn't the first time Hawaii Island's privileged position has been noticed by a rocket company. At least two other spaceports have been proposed in the last 20 years. Both generated strong opposition from the community. That doesn't appear to have changed with the Alaska Aerospace Project.
100% in opposition.
That's Russell Ruderman. He represents East Hawaii in the state Senate. He says that 20 to 30 members of his constituency have contacted him about the proposed launch site. All of them oppose it.
The environmental hazards that come with such a project are massive and unavoidable. You know, you're going to burn a huge amount of fuel with every launch. That fuel has residues that fall on the land and fall in the ocean. There's the distinct possibility of mishaps, and we've seen pictures of the same company having rockets go haywire just after takeoff in their Alaska launch pad. And so who knows what that would affect. You know, in my district, as in most places of Hawaii, we really cherish our environment. We like a clean, healthy environment. It's one of the reasons a lot of people move there. So we don't like it when someone comes along and proposes to use our district as an industrial sacrifice zone. There's this longstanding attitude about Puna and a little bit about Kau that nobody really lives out there, so let's use it for some dirty, toxic industries. But it's not true. It's the fastest growing district in our state, and plenty of people live out there.
And Ruderman isn't swayed by the economic argument.
The high-paying jobs are all going to be imported from elsewhere because we don't have people here educated or trained in rocket launching. So we're not going to get the high-paying jobs. We're going to get the janitor-type jobs. So, no, I don't know anybody that thinks the benefit of sacrificing the health and safety of our community for economic benefit is a good deal in this case.
Alaska Aerospace also has community relations challenges in its hometown.
There is no oversight of Alaska Aerospace in Kodiak.
That's Mike Sarofchuk, a resident of Kodiak Island and the organizer of the Kodiak Rocket Launch Information Group. He's opposed the presence of Alaska Aerospace since the mid-90s.
They are exempt from the Kodiak Island Borough zoning regulations. They're exempt from all Kodiak Island Borough statutes. And there's nobody really at the state level that appears to have any authority over them.
The Alaska state law that created Alaska Aerospace requires the company to abide by all state and federal regulations, but notably does not include local requirements. On the economic front, Sarofchuk says the impact has been mixed.
Well, it depends on who you are. Some local contractors, electricians, and plumbers, they're certainly making money on the rocket launch. But in terms of seeing a reduction in the price of goods and services in Kodiak, that hasn't happened. If I owned a hotel, I might be seeing some benefits, but there's no indication that hotels are hiring more people because of increased use by Alaska Aerospace and so forth. There aren't high-tech jobs out there. There are people who work for security, driving around in pickup trucks, making sure nobody gets inside the buildings. There's maintenance guys making sure that the heating works and that the water system works. Any high-tech jobs are the people that come in to do launches. They bring in their own people from out of Alaska. No other space-related or launch-related industry or business has started up in Kodiak.
In fact, some parts of the Kodiak economy have actually been hurt by the presence of Alaska Aerospace.
It's pretty high on a lot of people's radar right now.
That's Julie Cavanaugh, a member of Kodiak's elected assembly. She comes from a commercial fishing family, the dominant industry in Kodiak. Cavanaugh estimates that 3/4 of Kodiak's population has a direct connection to the fishing industry.
And one of the results of a rocket launch is that they have to shut down airspace. That also means they have to shut down travel through waterways, and that means a large swath of ocean is shut down for the period that they say during the launch. And so for us, we have a huge commercial fishing industry, which shuts down transport of fish and transferring between fishing grounds.
Delays like that can have major financial impacts on fishermen, whose catch is valued based on its freshness. Access to roads and certain public lands are also restricted during launches. Both Sarofchuk and Cavanaugh urged Hawaii to proceed cautiously and had some advice for local officials.
Make sure you have local oversight and local control over anything they try to do out there.
That they know what their local and state ordinances allow. so that they're clear what's going to be in the future, have in writing whatever agreement they're going to get prior to the area being developed. If you have a large concern about environmental impacts, that they do an environmental study, not just an assessment. They're totally different things.
An environmental impact statement is an investigation into how a project will impact the local ecosystem. The lack of an EIS was a major problem for both Serovchuk and Kavanaugh. On Kodiak, Alaska Aerospace was not required to conduct a full environmental impact statement. They instead did a less invasive environmental assessment.
When they did first open up, they were not required to do an EIS. They just did an assessment. So those are two totally different things.
The EIS was not required under law in Alaska. And for its project in East Hawaii, Alaska Aerospace has already contracted for an environmental assessment, not an EIS. Alaska Aerospace CEO Craig Campbell said that if no significant issues are encountered in that assessment, the new site could be operational in as little as 24 months. I'm Ryan Finnerty for The Conversation.